hearing, work session on Senate Bill 5552, Oregon Public Broadcasting. Dallas, would you like to share your information with us?
Well, briefly, Madam Chair, members of the committee, as you remember, this budget was grant was originally in the Department of Administrative Services. Co-chairs moved it out, so you have some gotten stuff in Senate Bill 5552. It's essentially a grant to the Oregon Public Broadcasting through the Department of Administrative Services, and we have the chair of the commission or the broadcasting authority, as well as the CEO with us, and Sarah Gates from the Department of Administrative Services.
Okay, good morning. Betty, come on up.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you very much for having us here this morning. I think most of you are familiar with the OPB. And I'm Bill Swindell, the present board chair of Oregon Public Broadcasting. With me is Maynard Orm, the chief executive, and you know Sarah Gates.
Hi, Sarah. Nice to see you again. It's been a while.
We would like to start this morning, since we're in the video business, with a video. I promise you it is brief. It's less than 4 minutes. And it is an excellent illustration of the reach and the breadth of what OPB does.
Thank you.
Helping me with the video is Lori Kelly, our marketing director.
Thank you, Lori.
We care, but do we have the strength?
I couldn't miss your last grandson no more.
Do we have the time and money? And do we have the knowledge?
Do I have the right to take away my father's automobile?
Find out how Oregonians are dealing with the challenges of elder care on growing up and growing old. Caring for our parents here on OPB. From Oregon's art scene. Need an artist in his 90s painting better than ever, and a young man dedicated to restoring works of art. The imaginary world created in glass and amazingly detailed sculptures made for the chainsaw. All this and much more on Oregon Art Beat on OPB.
We like to keep you current.
Today on OPB, Oregon. This is Oregon Considered. I'm Morgan Holt.
This is OPB News. I'm Beth Hyam. A sick out by
the bonus of the Bill Oregon.
We bring you fresh perspectives each week.
All these other states can't be completely stupid. I mean, they're all interested in...
Kindergarten, they're lost. Sesame Street, just great fun, and that's the best way for them to learn. It's not something that they have to work at. It's something that they love to watch. And then our teacher here will go back and say, do you remember Big Bird or Cookie Monster? We talk about number 10. And they'll say, yes, they remember. And be
John Doerr's supporters, OPB supports its local efforts by producing award-winning programs for national and international broadcasts. So what is one of the almost 30 million Oregon kids enriched by our preschool Ready to Learn service each week? One of the nearly 100,000 students who use our college credit telecourses. Whether you enjoy OPB Radio for its award-winning daily coverage of local news, or you're one of the millions of Oregonians who treasure this statewide public service for your own unique reasons, we're proud to bring a world of learning to Oregonians all over our state.
Thank you, Lori.
Excellent.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, we'll give you a brief presentation, and then, excuse me, thank you for this, I'm getting over the cold, give you a chance to ask questions. Let me speak from the citizen side and the volunteer side. The mission of Oregon Public Broadcasting, which is an independent nonprofit, is to really support lifelong learning in many forms, both either very direct forms, whether it's GED, that's right, they told you about that. Graduate, I don't know what it means, graduate equivalency diploma?
Yes.
you're absolutely upset me.
Now you paid for quite a few.
Well, I did that because we're going to say OPB whether it was.
You can buy that acronym.
Yeah, you understand that this is a benefit for the American Cancer Society. Representative
Butler. Okay. That's also ACS.
Okay. The point being that we are dedicated to learning, whether it's in a form of documentaries or explicit education. OPB started in 1922 as a radio station coming out of Corvallis. I've always presumed that the OAC and KOAC is Oregon Agricultural College. Up until it was part of the Department of Higher Ed until 1980. From 80 to 93, it was a separate state commission. And in 1903, we became an independent nonprofit. Two of the components I want to emphasize, as they're important to me, non-commercial and nonprofit. OPB is a non-commercial broadcaster. It means that their content is for the sake of the viewers and the listeners. Their content is not for the sake of promoting commercials. While there are other stations on the dial that provide documentaries or provides some kind of learning programming, it is commercially driven. If it doesn't draw, if they can't sell ads around it, it doesn't get on the air. The nonprofit aspect means that we have no shareholders. We have no financial owners to be accountable to. We are accountable to our users, to our viewers and listeners, consistent, again, with our emphasis on content. I think that was illustrated well in the video of how committed we are to content. We are doing everything we can to produce local content about Oregon, in Oregon. We also are probably underappreciated for the amount of content we produce, which is shown by PBS nationally. The list that's behind me, I just wanted to show you to demonstrate the reach of Oregon Public Broadcasting. There are over 85% of Oregon households watch Oregon Public Television. We are 50,000 children a day in Oregon watch Sesame Street. Through television, we distribute information to teachers. Over 30,000 teachers have access to the programming we produce as an educational tool. Radio is growing incredibly fast. Our greatest membership growth is with younger adults being brought into OPB through radio. Radio is, we feel, is one of the best statewide sources of journalism, as it reports on, it does not have an allegiance to a city. It reports on the whole state. All this information is your packet, so I'm not going to list it for you. I'm going to ask Meter now to give you some more specifics about our ask and what we use the money for.
Thank you, Bill. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's a real pleasure for us to be here today to present our request for approximately $3.4 million for 2 years.
And I need to have you put your name on the record.
Maynard Orme.
Thank you.
President of Oregon Public Broadcasting. Thank you very much. I just want to review quickly our goals, if you wouldn't mind pulling that in. This is what OPB is all about, to maximize opportunities to provide financial stability and long-term growth, to achieve and maintain, to operate a responsive, customer-focused organization, which is an indispensable community service, to operate an efficient and an enriched organization with a well-trained, well-equipped, diverse workforce, to position OPB as an industry leader in applying existing and emerging media technologies, and to produce and present dynamic programs that convey information through a diverse portfolio of integrated, high-quality multimedia projects. That's certainly one of our major goals in terms of this changing and diverse media that we face today. And I would be glad to answer any specific questions about that. What I'd like to do now is to run you to page 13 and 14 in the fact book that we have, which gives you an idea of what OPB's current programming is. Page 13 is our television offerings, which at this point is only one channel, but we are now in Portland and in Corvallis offering multi-channel services on a test basis with our digital signals. But for our main channel program service, this is it. I want to draw your attention especially to the 40% of our schedule, which is children's programming. It's a huge commitment to young children. To get them ready to learn, and another 23% in formal and informal education. So you can see almost two-thirds of our activities are driven by learning, and another third is basically information with a small amount of entertainment programming. On our radio service, the bulk of our service is news and information, with about a quarter directed to cultural programming and music. So that gives you a sense of who we are and what we're doing. The other pages that I want to draw you to are the pie chart on page 22, which shows you the changing nature of our financial support over the years. We've made a very strong commitment to developing programs not only for Oregonians but for the national and international marketplace, and have developed funding for our budget through that service. That's what that 15% is, and you can see that in about 20 years ago that was only 4%, and we're gradually growing that piece of the revenue. In addition, our underwriting and our private membership support has grown a great deal, while state and federal government funds have decreased. But I must say we are just terribly happy with our state support, and that support goes to help support our outlying translator and transmitters, as well as our emergency activation service. We're the hub for all emergency activation services for the state. And on page 8, you can see the emergency alert system breakdown that of which Oregon Public Broadcasting is the hub. All commercial and non-commercial stations go to us in any kind of emergency. And when you hear that little beep on our air, it's merely testing that service. In addition, I'd like to point you to the map on page 9, which gives you pretty much what our coverage is. And I know that you all have a lot to do today, so we want to be brief and have you ask any questions that you might have. But I do want to point out that today, because of the Federal Communications Commission mandate, we are now in the process of building two distinct services, our digital service, which will be multi-channel and high definition, and our regular analog service. And with that, our costs of operating are going up quite a bit. And with the energy problems that we're going to have, we know that this will not be a small amount of money that it will cost us to continue not only to operate our analog service, but to add our digital service, as I say, a parallel separate service side by side. In a sense, we're running two Oregon Public Broadcastings now. So that's where we are, and we will continue to grow that. Just a quick update, we have two digital transmitters on the air now, one in Portland and one in Corvallis. Our next efforts will be in Bend and Eugene and LeGrand, and then we have 39 translators eventually to change over to a digital. I know this is not about digital, but I just wanted to give you an update on where we were there. So that really concludes my brief remarks, and I would enjoy it if you would have any questions. I will add one thing. On the way in this morning, I heard on NPR that only 50% of the population of the United States reads. So that was the latest shocker for the day. And if anything, Oregon Public Broadcasting is trying to promote reading and language comprehension to people. So that's obviously an area that will continue to be a priority for us. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hayden.
Thank you. I have several questions. If I can just sort of do them as stream of consciousness, and then you can answer me at the end. I was in the legislature in 1993, and as I remember, that's a long time ago, but as I remember, OPB came to us and said, we would like to be independent. We prefer not to be regulated by the state. Like the prodigal son, give us our inheritance and let us go. And as I recall, we said, go in peace, my son, and do good things. And it appears that, like the prodigal son, OPB is back again, so we still need help, Dan. My questions would be, there are many nonprofits in the state. Why would the legislature choose to fund this nonprofit in preference to other nonprofits? Second question would be, have you had a grant every biennium since 1993 from the state of Oregon?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Have you had a grant every biennium? Yeah. Third question would be, as this is a significant amount of money, do you think an oversight committee would be in order if you're to continue to receive grants from the legislature? And finally, why do you pick $3.5 million instead of $350,000 or $35 million? What is there about that number that you come to us?
All right. Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, let me try and talk to you about that. During our separation, we never said that we wanted to be totally financially independent. We believe that what makes Oregon Public Broadcasting work is the financial partnerships between the state, the federal government, the members, and the corporate community, as well as our own working to raise funds by producing programs for PBS. So that's really the way in which we have built together this revenue stream. I don't think we believe that we would like to see that 10% of your budget support end. We think that's very important because it does support the emergency alert system. It does support our translators in areas where there are very few people. It does support our transmitters in central and southern Oregon as well. So we would like to believe that you would think that would be important in terms of helping the state of Oregon hear issues and be aware of issues that are not only Portland-centric but are indicative of the nature of the rural part of the state. We do have a grant from the Department of Agriculture, which has been very successful, called Oregon Stories, which brings to people a wide variety of issues and programs about rural Oregon. We just are finishing two now, one on tribal economies and another on small town economies, which we think are very important for people who live in the Portland area here. So that's why we think it's important for you to support Oregon Public Broadcasting. Regarding the second question on every biennium, yes, the state has supported this every biennium. I think there's a chart in the book that shows that's page
also,
4.
And Sarah Gates, Sarah, yeah,
right.
Show that.
Right.
Why don't you go ahead and give your presentation now, and we'll go ahead and have some more questions after that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Sarah Gates, Budget Management. In front of you, you have the usual budget management packet that outlines the governor's recommended budget. If you turn to page 2, you get the actual numbers behind this request. Oregon Public Broadcasting was included, given $3.4 million in the governor's recommended budget. And in answer to Representative Hayden's question of why this amount, for the last several biennia, Oregon Public Broadcasting has been given a current service level adjustment. So they have their funding has not increased any more than the standard inflation amount, which in this biennia was 2.5%. compared to the 9901 legislatively approved budget. Page 3 just points out, what does this budget do for Oregon Public Broadcasting? It does continue at a current service level funding, but it does not provide any additional funding to support the conversion to digital broadcasting, which was mentioned by the executive director.
Madam Chair,
can
we stop right there?
Sure.
I wondered what had happened. I asked Alex if he'd known what had happened to the digital broadcasting request that we had examined and weren't able to fund last session. I wondered what happened to the digital broadcasting section of it.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we currently have two bills that could develop some digital support. One is the old SB 622 that was passed in the last biennium legislature. And if Jim Hill's bill worked its way forward, it would require additional funding by GTE Verizon, which would then kick in enough funds to help us, that was a rural telecommunications regulation, which would help OPV to the extent of $5.5 million. We are currently looking at a $28 million bill, funding cost, to support this digital transition. We have raised over $12 million, mostly from private funds, for that support, and we have a five-phase activity, which phase one was the Portland Transmit, and phase two was the Willamette Valley, which we're working on now. Secondly, there is another bill, SB 3700, I'm sorry, House Bill 3700, which is for $8 million. $8 million for Oregon Public Broadcasting and $1 million for Southern Oregon Public Television to support digital transition. That's still being heard this session, and Sarah may want to add something to that.
I plan to just mention it briefly at the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I apologize for interrupting us.
Not a problem.
Just stopped a moment. I was looking at your list on page 4, and there are 25 states listed. Does that mean that half the states don't contribute?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, no. This represents basically the state networks or states that have state offices where funding goes to those offices and is distributed to the stations through those state offices. There are about 10 other states that receive state funding that go directly to the stations, New York being probably the most prominent. So those are not listed here. Perhaps we should have done that.
I see that neither Washington nor California are on this list. Do they receive state funding?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, California in the past has received funding. They now have, during Jerry Brown's administration, and after that, the funding went away. The state is putting together a multi-million-dollar programming. The stations are putting together a multi-million-dollar programming fund and are going back to the state legislature for several million dollars to fund a hopefully daily a newscast. But that has not been completed yet. In Washington, there's probably about $500,000 that are given to stations, but it's not a significant amount at this point in time. Although those individual stations, it's not a state network, are working on developing additional funds.
Go ahead, sir. Did you have a question? Go ahead, sir. Okay. Page 4 of my presentation also addresses Representative Hayden's question about over time what has the state contribution to Oregon Public Broadcasting been. And this is just a chart that shows you, the bars show you what the actual biennial appropriation was, and that's general fund. The black line shows what the inflation-adjusted amount has been, and so compared to, if you were to say, in 1989-91 dollars, which is where this chart begins, the black line shows you what the purchasing power of the current contribution is, and basically we're giving them 41% in terms of actual purchasing power of what we did in 89-91. Page 5 duplicates one of the charts that you saw a few minutes ago. It shows what portion of the state, what portion of the Oregon Public Broadcasting budget is made up of the state contribution, and it is about 10% currently. That has dropped significantly over time. Private support is the largest component. Finally, on page 6 is just a brief note on House Bill 3700, which, as Maynard mentioned, is working its way through the legislature this session. It is gives $7 million of lottery funds to Oregon Public Broadcasting and another $1 million of lottery funds to the Medford station. And I believe at the moment it has been referred out of committee to Ways and Means and is awaiting further action. That ends my presentation, and the three of us would be happy to answer any additional questions.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to finish Representative Hayden's question regarding oversight. OPB has a 24-member board. That board is very diverse in terms of geography. And that meaning approximately half Portland Metro members and half non-Portland Metro members. It is very diverse in terms of gender. We are reaching for increased diversity ethnically. In addition to that board's oversight, we have a community advisory board function, which we are expanding, which is a specifically a content response function, in that a committee that can come back and say, we would like to see more of this. We didn't appreciate seeing that.
But the question was, well, that's all well and good,
mm-hmm.
to have a committee of peers, all of whom are trying to allocate the funds that you receive,
mm-hmm.
but the usual thrust of such a committee is to get more funds from whatever source. The responsibility of the legislature, of course, is to apportion the funds equitably
mm-hmm.
among Oregon Project Independence, the state police, and if we are to give to other worthwhile nonprofit organizations, we should consider United Way and the Eugene Mission and things like that. Why would OPB stand out from among those others for state support in the absence of a legislative oversight committee?
I don't, Representative Hayden, I don't have the background or the institutional history to remember to be here in 93 and to know what, Mr. Orm could probably speak better to that. My general feeling is that we are performing some public services, emergency broadcast system, distribution to public schools, and also being statewide. One of the few resources that's at the state's disposal for these things that is a statewide service. I'm not offering that as a complete answer, but that's my knowledge.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't quite get the answer. Would you be open to the idea of reporting to a legislative committee on a biannual basis as to your budget and spending?
Certainly. We could report.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, let me just refer to page 5 in the book. It's been provided to us for value returned or received relative to our tax dollars. And if you go down that whole list of various items, social welfare programs down 19, and some of the other kinds of public programs, and I recognize this doesn't single out any single boys club, girls club, or other type of community chest program, but public television and public radio broadcasting is number 3 and number 4 for bang on the buck is really pretty high. In some cases, when we hear about $500 hammers and $800 toilet seats, it gives us a lot better bang on the buck than the military, perhaps, in some issues. That having been said, I wanted to say that first of all, that I really do appreciate public broadcasting in Oregon. I think you do a great job. And so far as legislative oversight, that's in part what we do here on this committee, and we certainly have, and I think I did ask for it last session, a complete budget, and received a complete budget of all resources, and we have in effect an allocation that shows us that the $3.4 million that's being asked for is 10% of the total revenues which are anticipated. So we could certainly ask for that, and that was asked for and received. It was proffered last time to both look at the resources as well as the disbursements. I want to attest to Representative Hayden, members of the committee, on examining that in the last session when Dallas ran out of the room. I think he's got one in the other room. He probably has one himself. So that we didn't find anything as a Ways and Means Subcommittee in general government that was not appropriate or wasn't otherwise accountable. Now, they don't have the DAS, the Department of Administrative Services, oversight, but they don't have the Department of Administrative Services overhead either that they would have to pay for. So I do appreciate that. The questions, I have two questions. well, I think a couple more than that, but the digital will between Senate Bill 622 as potentially amended and House Bill 3700 and any other vehicles that may be floating around this session, do you have any assurances that you're going to continue on the proper track towards digital statewide?
Chairman Connor, Representative Butler, the FCC has mandated this. They have made no basic sounds that they're going to change the mandate. I think all of us think that the deadline for turning back the analog channel, 2006, is not going to happen, and that they will eventually have to extend that, which of course means we'll be running both services probably, my guess is, until 2010 or 2011.
Is that super spending, Maynard?
Is
that super spending to do that, run both analog and digital at the same time? It costs us a lot more to run both both signals.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the problem is that the digital transmitters are in what they call the ultra-high frequency UHF range. In order to cover the same signal area, the waves are shorter. You have to provide more power to do that. So actually the cost of the digital service is probably double to triple the operating cost of the analog service for Oregon Public Broadcasting, because on the analog side we tend to be in the VHF or very high frequency range, which are longer wavelengths where you need less power to get out to the same distance. So that's what's going to happen to us. It's beginning to happen now.
Madam Chair, in that regard, let me ask this question. This is a question which we have not been uniformly asking every agency. However, behind the scenes, as we've had opportunities to privately meet with agencies, I've asked the questions relative to the actual estimated cost of power to them during the next biennium. What's your emergency backup plan for the overall power situation that we're faced with and the potential cost?
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, in just to give you an example, in the Portland area, we are working with KGW Channel 8. We have a partnership agreement with them, which is a limited liability corporation. We share in all the costs. So our costs in terms of putting up a tower and renting land have been halved because of our participation with them. Secondly, we are just completing a 1.2 million watt diesel generator for that power in case there should be any emergency, and are working with the power company to see what kind of arrangements we can make for possibly putting some of that back into the grid that we don't use. So that's where we are.
Final two questions,
yes,
Madam Chair. State of Idaho has, as you're probably well aware, has I'm sure you are, has come under tremendous scrutiny. As a matter of fact, they now have disclaimers on, I think, at least 1 hour, disclaimers that are run on the air relative to that which is displayed. That came about as a result of some very controversial programming, which they lunged out on their own to go ahead and do after public input said, no, we prefer that it not happen. Tell me the response, and I think we talked about this a little bit in the interim, but tell me the response. And this gets back a little bit to what Representative Hayden has asked, that the OPB may have relative to state oversight when you've got a group of legislators that say, we think that this is not appropriate programming or that we would like to have more of this.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, one of the beautiful things about America is its diversity. And what we try to represent are... Our job is not to be an opinion leader. Our job is to present various points of view which allow individuals to make up their own minds about what they should believe. So that's really our internal, we live and breathe that philosophy.
Have you seen the Idaho disclaimer?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, yes, I have. And I think it's, for me, a little bit disconcerting. Our board operates under what we call editorial integrity, a framework which does give independent voice to the staff, and if they're unhappy with the staff, that focuses on me, and they will make their peace with me or I leave. So that's just, I have no contract. I work on a day-to-day basis, so that's simply, in a sense, the unspoken relations that we have. Peter Morrell, who runs the Idaho Public Television Network, I know has been under fire. And I think it is indicative of a different culture. And we ran those same programs and have had no problems. In the years I've been here, we have had one program that the legislature wanted us to run. As a matter of fact, I had a letter signed by about 60 legislators. It was called Times Untied. We chose not to run that program because we didn't think it was appropriate for the culture of Oregon, and I'm frankly glad we didn't. So it's my job to really make those tough decisions, to have staff that do that and take the heat where appropriate or take the accolades where appropriate, and that's my responsibility. I'm certainly willing and able to do that.
I have two final questions.
Oh, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I'd like to answer that from the board's perspective. I often like to draw the analogy with Oregon Public Broadcasting with higher education. The state funds seven universities through the Oregon University System, of which many of them have liberal arts programs, and in many classrooms there are things taught which I think many legislators maybe wish weren't taught. I don't think that undermines the value of the importance of the commitment of the state to higher education, and I would hope you would consider your commitment to OPB to be analogous.
I really do. I quite honestly, at the time expressed my support for OPB and my support for the folks in Idaho. Was hoping that it didn't turn out the way that it did turn out, but they still have their funding intact. Last two questions. Is there one with a little bit of mirth? Is there some way that after when we get the digital signal in here that you can be able to identify those of us who have paid our dues and not have to go through the spring and fall fund drive?
I love it. Madam Chair, Representative Butler. You know, it's really an interesting phenomenon. I think most of us would prefer to do less pledge. I cannot tell you, though, that the public always feels that way, because when we do pledges that aren't as hard-hitting, the money doesn't come in. And the research from 30 years ago when we started all of this shows it consistently that you really have to hammer on people to get them to do it in terms of the pledge. And pledges really, in a sense, are bone marrow. It's a lot of our new membership, so that's why we continue to do it. You may be interested to know that the new president of PBS has just finished with what she calls a development summit to look at membership practices to see what we can do differently. But there has been nothing on the horizon that takes the place of that kind of activity, unfortunately. I wish it weren't true, but there are times when we do the soft sell, in a sense, where we just put an announcement up and a voiceover that will bring in maybe 9 or 10% of the revenue that the on-air pledge with phone calls brings in. It's amazing to me, but we would love to change it, but it doesn't seem to the public response.
Go ahead, Bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, Oregon Public Broadcasting is very pleased to be one of the highest per capita, I think the highest per capita, privately supported public broadcasters in the country. Of the 63% of the, we illustrated in the pie chart, about, or 65%, about 12% of that is business underwriting, and the rest of it is individual memberships. However, we, by our estimation, about 1 in 6 viewers and listeners pledge. So we see it as necessary to tap the people that are enjoying our service.
My final question, Madam Chair, I know that they buy their programs nationally, and if nationally or internationally, they have to be released for that. But when my wife told me when I arrived home from Mother's Day that there was a national article in one of the magazines that she reads that you're going to be dropping Mystery, one of the reasons for me going home has now dropped off. The only television I watch is public TV, other than whatever videos my daughter clears me to watch. She has to explain the language on some of them. What happens when a program a series as popular as Mystery is dropped from, that's got to hurt your ratings.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, it is a genuine effort on the part of Pat Mitchell, the new president of PBS, to try and develop funding to do American programs that would relate to that. Mystery is done by British companies, and while I'm not sure that it will go away, I think that has yet to be determined, even though it has only been funded for another couple of years. I think the system, if it wants it, will find ways to develop that money through other program distribution services. So I wouldn't call it that yet.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, this hurts my heart to ask this question, Maynard, and you know what I'm going to ask you. I've been on the board of OPB for 15 years and proudly served, and I testified in this body before in support of OPB. I came down here and testified at the time that OPB was looking to become autonomous from the state system. You guys helped me write that testimony. It had heavy emphasis on support of community radio. And a problem has arisen in my district, in Senator Dukes' district, where we have a problem with OPB's signal over the top of our local community radio station. This has been going on for some time. I've had a meeting with you and the folks from KMUN. All the time that I served on OPB, I heard how supportive OPB was of community radio. I've hunted for a solution to the KMUN problem, and at this moment, I don't know whether the fix is there. For you guys able to raise $350,000 or $450,000 on a weekend, my guys and Senator Dukes' guys operating on a fraction of that for the whole year, and now we have a signal conflict that involves the big Portland station versus the little community radio station. My question to you is, have we resolved that?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, actually, thank you for asking the question. We have been in contact. This is, in a sense, a little bit complicated in that religious broadcasters have applied on these translators as well as public broadcasting. Both KMUN and OPB have two separate applications. We have worked with those religious broadcasters. I again talked with Everett Helm last night, who's been working on this, who is constantly trying to bring the religious broadcasters to the table. And at this point, both he and I think Doug Sweet think that it will be resolved equitably. In the conversations with the religious broadcasters, they have said that they would be willing to give up that little bit of a population that would interfere with KMUN's translator request. They have, the FCC will make a decision on this by June 4th, so we realize that this deadline is coming fast. We have done our best to get them to respond to us. They have not given us anything in writing, but have said orally that they think that they will be able to do this. Short of that, we are committed to finding a solution that will work equitably for both of us, and I believe that is what we will do.
I just want to say for the record, I don't think we can tolerate a situation where community radio that you purport to be comes down and steps on the little local radio station that is a beloved factor in our community without coming to you looking for some kind of relief. They get no state support at all, and I and with Senator Dukes listening to this, hope to hold you at your word, Mr. Orm, that you will help us find a solution that doesn't have Portland coming down and standing on top of Astoria's signal and down the North Coast.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, we have supported KMUN in terms of the engineering costs for these surveys. Our application is really no different than one that we had on the air before that was taken over by a full-service broadcaster that we're simply trying to replace. We don't have any desire to serve the Astoria area. These are all fringe signals that are really kind of outside the city limits, so that has never been our intent. And
Tillamook is also part of this discussion.
It was, and we were on the air there with a signal that got bumped. So it is not adding any additional service that we haven't had. So we are doing our best to work it out. We are trying our best to have the religious broadcasters respond to us on this. I know that Ev has been working hard on that and has communicated with you, I think, through email about his progress. I don't think you've heard anything from him recently because he hasn't gotten anything back from them. So,
And for the record, I'd like to thank Mr. Orman and his staff, particularly Everett Helms, who has been very helpful in doing this. I'm going to vote yes for this budget today, but as it makes its way through the process, it's my intention, and I hope Senator Dukes will join with me, in keeping the Ways and Means Committee informed of what progress we're making to resolve what really is perhaps fatally detrimental to our little community radio station, much beloved by folks on the North Coast.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, we have no desire to see that station hurt.
Okay, thank you both very much. Yes,
Senator. I just wanted to say, I guess my take is slightly different. I think initially OPB came in pretty heavy-handed into the situation, but the folks at KMUN don't back down easily, and you came to understand that there was a significant problem. It is a very well-supported group in Astoria, and the community took exception to what you were doing. But I do believe that you've responded well. I believe there's a solution out there. Unfortunately, it's not nearly as easy as we thought it was going to be initially. I encourage you to continue working on it, but I believe that you're going to do that. I pleased the answer that I got earlier when I asked about it, and so it is important. You know, I can't get any of your services where I live, but I can get KMUN, so I'd like to be able to continue getting them.
Thank you very much, and it sounds like there has been a problem that Representative Johnson and Senator Dukes and all are aware of, and we appreciate your response to their concerns and appreciate your testimony. We're going to go into, let's see, I open the public hearing and work session, so Dallas, would you go into the...
Madam Chair, the committee you have before you our write-up, and behind it is my recommendation. The request, governor's budget, is for $3,434,272. Staff's recommendation is to reduce that by the co-chair's 1% or $34,343, so that the recommended appropriation is $3,399,929. We have also included, because this was a gut stuff, we moved it out of the Department of Administrative Services. I have before you the suggested changes to Senate Bill 5552 that would provide the $3,399,929 to the public broadcasting through the Department of Administrative Services and to be allocated on a quarterly basis. So that's the language of the bill. That
is, the money will be allocated on a quarterly basis?
Yes, beginning July 1 of 2001. Eight quarters, so every 3 months.
And so we need a motion. Representative Butler.
Move.
Madam Chair, discussion.
Discussion.
I'm concerned about two things. Apparently my question about the prodigal son independent was anticipated, because I see on the reader board they came prepared with the Oregon laws that said, which makes me think that the subject was in their mind, if they came prepared with the reader board showing Oregon laws. I would like to go back and read the 1993 bill, because my understanding was that they sought autonomy, they sought independence. We gave them several $1 million worth of broadcasting stations. I'm not sure how much, $1, $5, $10 million worth of broadcasting equipment, and said, go in peace. And apparently they enjoy the independence, but they still want the public funds. Well, $3.5 million is one thing, but $10.5 million, which I see, is quite another. And I'm not sure if the legislative body fully understands that there is a potential $10 million impact for a grant to an independent agency. And I'm prepared to raise that question in a wider forum. But I do want to read the 1993 bill first. I'm also philosophically a little amused that an organization that is so environmentally correct would obtain their electrical power from a diesel generator, which of course is air polluting and uses fossil fuel. But whatever works.
You did it for backup, wasn't it?
I think so. I certainly wouldn't be in a position to support the full $10.5 million, Madam Chair. The full amount is not before us, but I'm curious to know what remedy might might be applied to my concerns here. I'm prepared to vote no and carry it to full committee on the floor of the House. On the other hand, if there is some amelioration of my concerns, as perhaps annual reporting to a legislative oversight committee as to the use of these $3.5 million, I'm still probably going to oppose the $7 million. I think that's too big a bite of the apple when they said they didn't want a second bite.
And that will come to us in the form of House Bill 3700. Representative Hayden, what I hear your concern, I hope that the people that have presented before us today will visit with you and see if they can address your concerns. And we, assuming you want to be recorded as a no at this point, is that correct?
Madam Chair, I'd like to amend Representative Butler's motion to include a budget note requiring annual budget reports be presented to this or an appropriate committee.
Let me say that if Representative Butler, do you want to respond to the friendly amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me say this. I certainly want to acknowledge, and I do appreciate the conversation and dialogue. Back in 1993, we were funding at a level of $5.3 million in absolute dollars. At that particular point, that was down from the 6.1. And the amount of the request that's before us today, as adjusted and as recommended by Legislative and Fiscal Office, is just a few dollars under $3.4 million. That being the case, I think that we can certainly discuss at another time any additional amounts to take us to digital. Again, we knew last session there was going to be a fairly spendy amount that was going to have to be looked at some point in the future relative to the digital signal. That being the case, maybe it would assuage some concerns of Representative Hayden if the OPB did go ahead and provide us with a copy of the budget. However, I don't know that I would encourage us to hold up, and I would certainly look to Dallas from Legislative Fiscal. Legislative Fiscal has a policy of reviewing a number, including you have oversight relative to lottery and other agencies which do not report directly to or have not reported directly to Ways and Means in the past, but you do maintain some connectivity during the interim. Dallas, could you tell the committee about that?
Briefly, Madam Chairman, the committee, we have contact and to varying degrees with these agencies and try to keep abreast of their needs and the situation out there. We haven't had any formal reporting with Oregon Public Broadcasting in the past, but we can certainly change our approach and work with them and review periodically their operating budgets and where they stand with the public funds.
I think in that regard, we did see last session, as I recall, we actually did receive a copy of the full budget that was prepared for the full. At first, we received 1 year, and then we received a biennial amount to show us approximately what the amount was. So, I personally, having gone through that, was satisfied at that time that we were getting the bang for the buck, and recognize also we do represent 10% of the total amount of resource for these folks. Representative Hayden, just a question, are you making that in the form of a budget commentary?
Yes, a conceptual budget note.
Okay.
Representative Butler.
I think that if we could prepare that in the form of a budget note, that it would be the legislative fiscal, and then if at some point in the future, the legislature, I'm really hesitant, after I saw what happened in Idaho, I'm really hesitant to reach inside of the Oregon Public Broadcasting and say we want legislative oversight over your programming, because I saw what it did in Idaho, and it isn't very pretty. It really prostitutes the whole process. And now every hour there's a big disclaimer that goes on for maybe perhaps 10 seconds of good airtime that says basically, you know, this. There may even be acts of violence and things like that. that if we're committed in the state of Idaho, we're illegal on those kinds of things. Basically, it's kind of like the on the package you said.
I'm going to lose my quorum. Couldn't you wait one second? I'm going to lose my quorum. Senator Dukes has to go. We're going to have to revisit this bill if we leave. So I think we've decided. We have a budget note. We have your motion before us. Any further discussion? Any objection? Other than, do you want to be recorded as a no?
No, ma'am, not with the budget note. Okay. But Madam Chair, I'm going to revisit $7 million in another.
And you will contact Representative Mr. Jordan. Thank you very much. So moved. Thank you very much, committee. I appreciate you staying, Senator, or Representative Johnson. We are now closing the work session on Senate Bill 5552. Beg your pardon.
I move this to full committee with a due-pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended, yes.
I got a little ahead of myself here.
Senate Bill 5552.
You've heard the motion before us. Any objection?
Madam Chair, discussion.
Discussion.
Even though I'm voting aye in subcommittee, Madam Chair, I am probably going to vote aye in full committee, but I am going to continue this discussion.
Yes, I understand, Representative Hayden. Any objection? If not, Senate Bill 5552 is now moved to the floor with a recommended due pass, and the carrier in the full in the House, Representative Johnson, offered to do that, and Senator Dukes is willing to do that in the Senate. And thank you both very much. And now we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 5552 and open a work session on House Bill 2121 relating to bond administration.
Madam Chair, just with regards to the last one, perhaps they could help by getting their budget out to a copy of the budget out to Representative Hayden and other members of the committee before full, so that there'd be some level of comfort at that point.
Can you do that before?
Sure. I'll talk to Brian and we'll make sure that we get to talk. We have audit financials, whatever you like.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. Dallas, you want to speak first? We're going to have your report on 2121.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2121 A. Gross was brought to us, and the Treasurer provided testimony, and the subcommittee wanted clearer language that would require the Department of Economic Community Development Department to make sure that that department received approval by the Treasurer and the Attorney General before it entered any of these agreements. That wording was provided in this revised amendments to House Bill 2121A and Gross that you have before you. These amendments make it very clear in the statute that this department has to have, not only by reference to other sections of ORS, but right in this section, this department has to have the approval of Treasurer and the AG before they go on with these agreements. So I believe that these amendments accommodate not only with the Treasurer's first amendments, which was just cleanup, but these amendments meet the subcommittee's wishes with respect to House Bill 2121.
I guess what I want to be sure everyone's clear that we have the right amendments. I had two copies, the one you brought us today and one in my file folder. The one that is, can you differentiate
sure.
those words?
The one that was originally provided by the Treasurer has two lines on page one of the printed in Gross, and then two lines says on page two, and then on page two again.
And we're revised with.
We're revising it with a much more lengthy description of what is required that specifically says the department may not enter in, and that department, this follows a sentence that says the Economic and Community Development Department, da 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 da. So then following that it says the department may not enter into any contractual agreement as provided in this paragraph until the state treasurer has reviewed and approved the terms and conditions. So this makes it very clear that if they're going to go out and get bond counsel or do anything with these bonds, they've got to get the approval of the Treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
And that addresses the concerns, I believe, that the subcommittee had when this bill was brought before us last week.
Okay.
Discussion. Senator Dukes.
I have two questions. One, the Treasurer's office has reviewed this and said it's fine?
Yes. This came from the Treasurer's office.
And secondly, I remember the discussion, and I know that this is the session, one of a number of them that we've had, actually, where we're particularly concerned about this agency. But have they done something that we thought was inappropriate as it relates to selling a bond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, there's no inappropriate activity, no improper conduct. I think this is a response both to the amount of the bonding, the $200+ million bonding that the governor proposes to do as a result of the community development, the economic development fund, as well as it also addresses, I think it's a scattergun approach at agencies that would select their own bond council most everywhere in the state. We would like to have the treasurer with a broader scope of oversight over selecting bond councils and those kinds of things. So this, this kind of leads the way to...
They've got an ORS in here that says, does not apply to contracts for the appointment of bond counsel entered into pursuant to this section. Now, I don't know what the ORS is. I was just assuming that they could hire bond counsel on their own. It was the actual...
Oh, that ORS 279.712 refers to the Department of Administrative Services going through its purchasing.
Standard purchasing. Okay. That's all. Yeah. That's listed in each of the above subsections, 279.712, which I went back and that's just our standard procurement language is what it is. So, but I think it's probably to address in part the rather substantial anticipated borrowing, which is anticipated as a resource in the governor's current budget, and it also basically says let's get a better handle and one agency that really has the experts to
Madam Chair, that makes sense to me. I just know that this particular agency has been under fire this session a lot, and sometimes we load them up with extra stuff because we're upset with them for a session. So I just wanted to make sure that we weren't doing that. It sounds like we're not.
In that regard, may I just ask Legislative Fiscal, does this place a greater burden? Do you anticipate this is a greater burden on any department other than perhaps on Treasury to given the oversight?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, no, I don't believe so. This just makes it very clear in statute what is being required through reference.
I wouldn't want to load up anyone in that process. I just want to make sure that it isn't done.
Treasury is agreeing with you.
It's broad shoulders.
Let it be noted that they are nodding yes. Is that correct? Any other questions? Representative Butler?
I move, Madam Chair, that we go ahead and incorporate these amendments that are proposed, given to us as proposed amendments, to the A engrossed House Bill 2121 into House Bill 2121 A engrossed.
We've heard the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? If not, so moved.
Madam Chair, I move then that House Bill 2121 A engrossed with these amendments in addition be printed and then be referred to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Heard the motion before us. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved. And let's see, Representative Butler, would you have to carry that?
They'll just be given the full in the House.
You'll carry that in the House?
Yes.
Thank you,
committee. Appreciate your comments and discussion and hard work. Thank you.
We're trying to get both of these on call this Friday.
Okay. Well, they need to get with you.
Yeah,
I do have a copy of this.
I want to be sensitive to what Representative has indicated. Did you get a copy of the budget when they're actually? Oh, you have it there. Okay.
Listen, Hayden, you sit here if you want to look at this.
I'll make copies again, please.
Thank you.
Yeah.